We can start.
Paul did it, or you did a good job.
Just for the record, this is the Conservation Department Grants Committee on September 15th, 2010, at 3 p.m. Room 5 at State Office Building. In attendance from the committee are Jim Cox and Chair Scott Rall. There is no quorum.
Leslie, do you want to come down?
The agenda is a general discussion on the Conservation Partners grants, and there has been distributed, you all have it, the draft letter. A draft letter to Commissioner Holston.
Did you get some grants?
Not yet.
Well, they gave you five-some million today. They must think we're going to do good, huh?
There you go. We're trying to do good all the time.
I know that.
Oh, sorry.
It's, you know, as in informal discussions with other council members, you know, and small members of the Small Grants Committee, there's just there's 4 or 5 points that we want to try to communicate to the department, to the Small Grants Administration people, as to some possible changes that we would like to see. Most of the what's in this letter is kind of a culmination of probably 20 conversations with the entire Lesage Center Hunter Heritage Council. This is not Scott Rall solely, individually, or anything like that in that manner, but it's an attempt to communicate some wishes and desires in a more formal process. Okay, we've certainly called people and had phone conversations, sent an email, but my purpose behind the letter is to get the council's desires in a formal presentation, and then after we have the council look at it, which we are going to, you know, we're going to bring this to the full council meeting next in October. When is it? 14th?
In November.
No, in November? We don't have no meeting in October? Mm-hmm. November? So this obviously isn't going to go out anytime soon, I don't suppose. Or are we in a position to send that before the council looks at it?
We can't make a decision, so we can't send it as the Conservation Partners Grants Committee. You can send it as a personal communication.
I can't.
You can't. You'd have to put it on the website then, too. But it would be just from you.
Okay. Well, I mean, are we...
Or you and Jim. The two of you can sign it.
Okay.
Say what you do.
And none of when the regular council was here today, they did not get this, did they? Or did you have that out there before everybody left?
No.
One of the questions that was asked is there's some frustration, Leslie, in the amount of time that it takes to submit a Conservation Partners program opportunity. It's been described to me by multiple different applicants, okay, that by the time they go through all of the requirements and all of that you know, the detail that's required to submit an application, that they've actually spent more time than it takes to prepare a request for funding from the large grants organization, okay, from us. The request for proposals are already out, right? We're in that period. September is the deadline. In the next go around, is it possible where we could say we want to submit a 3-page application for the grant administrator's review? At which point in time you would screen those applications and then say, you have been considered for further consideration. Mm-hmm. And then send out a letter, and we'll say you get 130 of those, mm-hmm. okay? All these people go through all this work, okay? And then you say that there's, of the 130, there's 50, that we think have merit, you know, that have made it through a pre-screening process. And then send those 50 people a letter and say, okay, now you 50 fill out this full program. So that those 60 people or 70 people that I'm assuming, and I did not look at the applications, that there was probably a pretty high likelihood that a large portion of those weren't going to get funded. Almost. I mean, you can look at that and say, I'm really sorry, that doesn't qualify. Your initial screening process could have filtered out a whole bunch of those people almost right away.
Probably, yes. Especially with last year's the applications we've got.
So if we did that, if we went to like a two-tier approach, mm-hmm. Remember we talked about that very simple one-page application. Okay, we're going to get quite to one. But a three-page application, and then screen those. Have a deadline for those. Okay. Now I'm assuming, could you screen 130 three-page applications in 3 days?
Absolutely not. I really don't think so. Depending on what level of detail we're going through, and depending on what questions you ask them, I shouldn't say absolutely not. It'd be tough, let's put it that way.
Okay, how long do you think it would take to pre-screen 133 pages?
Depending on what form I think come in. I think you're going to need to look at which are your overriding questions you want to ask them to see if they qualify. I mean, is it something as simple, are you a nonprofit? Or are you a private individual? Where are you doing the work? The real basic questions. Some of what's covered in our project summary page. I mean, that's pretty easy to get through. But you've got to remember there's something like 18 or 19 criteria in the appropriation language that we have to go through, and we've been told to score on those. And that's what takes up a good chunk of writing that application this year. And part of the reason for specifically addressing each of those in our application system this year is that we did not get good answers last year. It was really tough to score based on criteria and appropriation.
And there's 18 criteria?
Mm-hmm.
Are those 18 criteria, were they directed and set out by us to you?
I'm sorry, I only have two copies of these. This is our application and criteria scoring table, and all except for 15, 16, 17 are required in appropriation language.
In the appropriation rider for the program?
Yes. It says you will score applications on...
There's a criteria for evaluating.
Yes.
Applications must include a balance, and then there's a whole laundry list of items.
Yep.
Right. I just wanted to make sure that we're bringing in criteria from elsewhere.
We did bring in, I believe it's three, and if you look at the top, like I said, I think it's 15, 16, 17 or something, and they are, 15 comes from the Office of Grants Management Policies, which says that we have to look at an applicant's capacity just to successfully complete the work. 16, it supports existing landscape level plans. You know, any project that DNR or really the Outdoor Heritage Fund funds should support that. They just need to tell us how it's doing it. Same with 17. And that's it. Everything else is in the focus.
Am I right that each one of those questions, an applicant can write up to 1,000 words?
I believe that's what we have in the application system, is for yes. And they don't have to be complete sentences. They could do just list species, a bullet statement, something like that. It doesn't have to be a narrative.
So could we, if the projects ultimately had to be screened on those 17 criteria, okay, I understand, before you're going to get an appropriation, you're going to score to those criteria, could we go through there and pick five of those that we thought were most important and say, we'd like the grant administrator to initially pre-screen the applicants based on these five things. And if you get past these five things, then we'll say that cuts you to half. Okay, so now all of a sudden you're not reading 140 25-page plans, you're reading 60 25-page plans. That would cut that level of scoring to half. And then ultimately score that the ones that make that against all of those criteria? Can we use an initial screening and then an ultimate scoring system that's that?
Well, the department could do that now. I mean, they could only screen for certain things to begin with and then go, because this just says that they need to base their decisions on these items, but you could even, they could even take an application for items that didn't have any of these on there and decide which ones go forward without the screen and then ask the applicant to do this later. I mean, that's possible.
So, how difficult do you think it would be, Leslie, to actually come up with a two or three page screening application you know, that you could ultimately use, okay, mm-hmm. that would satisfy our desire for a much more simplistic, you know. What's happening is people apply, they spend a ton of time doing it because they've never done it before. But we keep talking about, me and Bill were just talking about how does a sportsman's club keep a budget? And the answer is they don't. It's at the end of the day, they got 20 grand in their checkbook. They say, can we find a good project? And it isn't every year they say, well, this year we're going to spend this much money. They don't have any idea how much money they're going to make or raise that year. Mm-hmm. You know, so how difficult would it be to come up with, and I don't know if that would be me and you picking mm-hmm. the five criteria that we want to use that would make satisfy you guys and us, and come up with a simplified pre-screening application. And obviously we can't use that for this round of appropriations, but we're about to make appropriations again. Do you think that's conceivably workable inside of your working environment?
I think it's something we should look at. I'm concerned with timelines and staff on that also, because you're adding a lot of work to do that. But the big thing is, too, it's not just these criteria. There's also, like, the financial review we've got to do and get paperwork in that I think is throwing some people, like asking for a 990 form. Some folks really don't know what that is.
Do you send them one? Do you send them an example of a picture of an empty 990 form?
You know, the question is, how far we go with helping that and still meet our other responsibilities of getting that money out the door? But their accountants should know that. If they are a nonprofit, they should know it to some level. And we have pointed folks to the Department of Revenue website where they can find that information.
I can tell you most, the target audience that I'm after doesn't have an account. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, my secretary comes and says, you know, we need to fill out the 941. I go, 941, what's a 941? 941 is the federal tax withholding. You know, if you're a sole employee, you send that every quarter or whatever. And if she says, well, you got to send in the payroll report. Oh, I don't know what that is, but I don't know what a 941 is. But so to me, if you say we need a 941, mm-hmm. I mean, why wouldn't we just put a scan of 941, put it on the site and say, you need 941, click here. They look at it and go, oh, I know what that is. I see that. I can print that. I can go fill that out, you know. But, you know, what you said that you're worried about timelines because this is going to be a whole bunch more effort.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. My concept is different in the fact that this is not going to be way more effort. This is going to be way, way, way less effort, okay? I mean, if all of a sudden you're looking at 130 three-page applications and ultimately only have to look at 40 or 30 25-page applications, that's got to cut your workload down dramatically compared to looking at 130 25-page applications.
That would.
You know? So, I mean, if we're looking at which everybody is obviously worried about administrative overhead and all of that, you know, and how many people it takes to do that. I mean, wouldn't that, in theory, have the capability of maybe reducing workloads, you know, 20%? I mean, the time it would take to screen those would go to half, right?
It very likely could. It's worth taking a look at that process. It'd be interesting to see how it play out. So you have a pre-proposal process where they have to answer a certain number of questions and then go on to a full proposal that would get more detail.
Now, and to me, one of the things in there would be a letter of support from the area wildlife manager or whatever. That would have to be one of those initial five.
Except if it's for work on DNR lands, you're kind of getting into a weird possible conflict of interest situation there, kind of lobbying for the DNR grant program to give a group money to do work on DNR lands. So we're trying to avoid having our staff write letters of support for work on DNR lands.
Don't they ultimately have to, though?
They need to do a project review and approval form if that work will be on DNR lands. But that's different than actually writing letter support.
Lobbying.
And it's one thing, too, if it's like someone wants to buy a rim easement and they're asking for our support because there's good wildlife value. That makes sense because that's our profession. That's what we do. But then to actually provide a letter support as opposed to, you know,
well, I thought one of our criteria was that the project had to have the approval of the area wildlife manager, the area SWCD, or one of those organizations.
Local support.
Correct. From a natural resource professional. And is that not necessarily then the case?
If they're working on, what we ask for is a letter of support or approval from the land manager.
Okay.
Who is responsible for the piece of land they're working on, or will, you know, if they're applying, will be maintaining it long term.
And that, but that wouldn't be my area wildlife manager, Wendy Krueger, then?
Not necessarily, depending on what the situation is. So, if it's a WMA in her area, yes. She would have to do that form.
But we could never do that form in the pre-screening process, then. Or could we?
We could, and that actually might be a good way to walk through the process and make sure, you know, DNR agrees with it. We don't have any heritage features to deal with.
Describe for me the makeup of your technical panel. Now, there was a fair amount of conversation that went around about who was in that.
Right now, we've got four committees set up based on habitat types: prairies, wetland waters, fish, game, and wildlife, and forest. And so there's four to six, I think actually five or six people on each committee. There are a variety of people from, you know, conservation clubs. I think we had somebody from the university. I think we've got one DNR on all those except we have two on prairies. And then who else is on there? I'm sorry, I don't have a list with my daughter.
That's a pretty dramatically different makeup than the technical committee from the first go-around, wasn't it?
Yeah, we had time this year to work on it, so that was a huge help.
Okay. And they only review the projects that are in their area, right? I mean, would we run a prairie project through the forest guy?
No, we select them out by habitat. The prairie group will get the prairie projects.
Okay, so nobody. I mean, I know that, like, if we're going to do a project, and it makes the area wildlife manager, then it, as it moves up the chain, it actually gets kind of get looked at by everybody. Eco Services and all of these different people have to look at a project that Feathers Forever works on, which don't have anything to, I mean, don't have anything to do with the project, but they require all the region managers to look at that.
For acquisition.
But we don't do that. We don't require anybody that's not really associated with the project to have to review it in the small grants program.
We should back up a little bit. If you're doing an acquisition that will be turned over to DNR for long-term management, it does have to go through our regional approval process and also the division process to make sure it's approved before it can be applied for CPL funds.
Okay.
So that way we've gotten all that approval taken care of, and we know which one we want.
And that's the one that actually calls out in the law, too, where it says it has to be approved by the commissioners. That's your process.
That's part of it, but also all the projects that are funded by CPL, he gets final approval on all those. So
right.
Some will be double catch, maybe,
right.
But the acquisition itself is approved prior to it coming to us as a grant process.
And if, other than an acquisition, then, okay, do any of those projects have to be reviewed outside the scope of the region that it's in?
The land manager, again, needs to approve it on their project, on their land. So if it's being work done out with one of Wendy's wildlife management areas, she needs to approve that process.
But that would be, at that point in time, they wouldn't have to go way, 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 way up beyond
and
her.
Unless there's something funky about it or it's weird or she has some concerns, she might kick it up to somebody for her comfort level.
One question I have for you, Jim, is when we initially set the cap on that at $400,000, we did that because we wanted, a duck organization to be able, if they wanted to do a water control structure or whatever, that they could do a single project, you know, and have enough money to finish that. Okay, how many projects did you get? And I'm not talking about necessarily this. Tell me what you can, and I'm not asking you to tell me what you can't. But how many standalone projects did you get this year for $400,000 versus how many projects did you get that were big projects that were attached to something much, much bigger?
Fiscal 11 are still coming in. So fiscal 10, I can't remember. I think we funded two that were parts of larger projects.
Mm-hmm.
How many we received off the top of half and type.
That's a relatively simple problem to take care of in the appropriation rider next time we can get everybody to agree on it. The question is whether you really want to do that.
And I can tell you that I made it just as abundantly possibly clear as I possibly could about 46 different times that I did not perceive that was the role of the small grants program. Okay, and obviously I did not get, and that's not just my concern, that's the small grants committee that I talked to, was that this is truly a small grants program. If there's a standalone project for $400,000, then we should be able to fund that. But to stick $400,000 into a $5 million project, that's going to get finished anyway. Okay? And the projects that we funded with our $400,000 are much poor parts of much bigger projects.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? The question that I would pose, and I think I already know the answer to it, if we hadn't done that, would those projects have been completed anyway?
I honestly don't know. I don't have time to track that.
Okay.
You know,
so in our appropriations language, we could say these projects have to either be standalone. Okay.
Total project size can be no greater than 400,000 plus 15% match.
Or you could just round it off to, for projects not to exceed $500,000 in total cost.
Do you still like the $400,000 figure, Jim? 2 years into it, I mean, do you still like it?
Yeah.
Can we go back to some of the qualifications about organizations when you're saying that your group doesn't have a budget, they don't have an accountant? That has raised some concerns with our audit staff, and also when we try to comply with the grant policies, if they're asking for above a certain amount, a dollar figure, we're required to request certain financial documentation. And we had quite a go around internally, too, trying to say that, you know, from other grant programs and working with some other smaller clubs, we know they can do the work. We know they have very low cash flow, but they're extremely capable of getting projects done out in the field. They just don't have any cash. And they work on, you know, one group in particular has a line of credit from a bank. But now they've, you know, have done this for a while, and they've got some experience, and they actually do have some of that financial paperwork. It's going to be tough to get state dollars out the door to groups that don't have or aren't starting to work on some of that financial documentation sophistication much longer, because they're really cracking down on how we're spending state dollars.
And can't that group team up with somebody that does? So I got the Raleigh Sportsman's Club that absolutely doesn't. I mean, I'm telling you, we were just talking about it. They sell memberships at $5 a piece. They write them in a spiral three-ring notebook, okay? And I don't know that they've ever mailed a membership renewal in their entire 55 years of existence, you know? And then they have a raffle, and they do this, and they do that. Now, if that organization then said, we're going to tag up with Jackson County Pheasants Forever, okay, and they have a cash management system, and they have all that, wouldn't that just satisfy all these problems? Wouldn't it be a lot easier to just recommend that organization hook up with either a watershed district or something like that, where you can run the grant through an entity that has all of that versus running this little sportsman's club, which doesn't have the finesse to provide you what you want, through that process? Do we do that? Do we recommend that?
We have done that. Some of the soil and water districts that actually submit the application are doing that on behalf of a local Pheasants Forever or some other group. The problem when you do that is what you're looking at is the grant agreement and all the reports and all the paperwork and everything is the responsibility of and gets credit for by that larger organization. So your little Round Lake Sportsman's Club would be showing up as a partner, but they won't get the credit for the one operating and managing the grant. So you won't see their name on a spreadsheet that we put out that says Round Lake Sportsman's Club got $5,000.
Why couldn't we say Round Lake Sportsman's Club / Nobles County SWCD and put them both on the line?
Because we like to have one person who is a fiduciary contact that the grant agreement goes to, and that's who would be applying for and receiving the funds.
Well, there is an issue of transparency and understanding who's ultimately asking for the money and who's using it. So you might want to think about some way to shine a little bit more light on that. I've got a question. How large does a grant have to be to cause the financial qualifications to kick in?
It's under the grants policy, and I can't tell you the name. I think it starts at $25,000 and scaled up from there, and depending on Heather's mind, I can sure to look at some of those. $25,000, I think you need a 990 or recent. I'm sorry, I had to look at the grant policy. I don't have it.
$45,000.
You're requesting $25,000. And I believe, too, if the group put in for, you know, for $25,000, you might kick into a higher level. I'm not sure on that.
What if I had requested a grant for $20,000? Do I need to deny that?
I don't believe so, no. It's not part of the documentation process.
Do you have any focus group or organized group of potential applicants who look at the process of applying?
Not currently. We have been discussing a way to get feedback from our applicants using some sort of survey tool or something like that. We can't get to it right now. But that would work with our applicants to see how well they got through the application system. What we would probably be missing is the people who maybe kind of looked at the web page or came to a meeting and said not really. And so we can help it when we have some comments about the application system, the reporting requirements, the actual work.
Do you have any idea how long it takes the average applicant to fill out an application?
No, I don't.
The system doesn't track how long they're on?
No. Not as of yet.
I was on line the other day, and I went to the application. I was actually going to try to print it out, and I couldn't find any place on there to print the application.
We've heard that comment a lot, and that's one thing we did not do this year, and that we're going to do next year. And I agree with you. I don't like that when I can't print it out either.
I mean, at least they can go home and fill it out, and they have 14 guys and hand it around until they get it filled out. And then they can bring it back and somebody can enter the data.
Well, Jamie did put together a template that has all the text box questions on there. And so you can print that out. And that was what we told folks. Go ahead and, you know, save this. Put all of your comment or your text, narrative text in there. You can do your character count. You can spell check it. You can rewrite it 5 times. And in case something crashes in the middle of your application, you can go back and you've saved it and you can put it back in, copy and paste it in. So we have done that for folks. Right now the system itself isn't printable. And I agree. I don't like that either.
What would be that Scott was talking earlier about 400,000 being part of a $1 million, $2 million, $3 million grant? What would be the impact, positive and negative, of writing the law as Greg described it, total project cannot exceed $500,000?
I don't know. I'd have to go back and look at what we got last year for projects and say how many we kicked out. And I could do that shortly with incoming projects. But off the top of my head, I can't give you the answer.
How many applications have you received so far?
We're up to around 55.
And the deadline is?
Tomorrow.
So that's substantially less than last year. That
it's a lot less.
The lot will probably come in tomorrow.
They came in pretty heavy on the last day. Yeah, the last day.
Do you have any idea what those applications that you have received so far total?
No, I can't tell from looking at the one page in the first year of this application. I can't tell.
Leslie, you know, if we use this criteria, and this is just for the first, what you call it, preliminary, why couldn't these just be yes or no answers? Do you have this? Do you have this? Yes or no? Have you in this? Yes or no?
Last year, Jamie and I tried to go through some of these as yes or no, and that's how we kind of made some initial cuts and, yeah, this is a good, this isn't. They did, gave us enough information. Didn't. But really, what's going on is 0 to 9, so like habitat benefits. How well does that one, especially in comparison to another one, do you want habitat benefits? So at some point, we're told we have to have, and this must be last year's because it's 1 to 10. But I don't think they get you enough information.
I think Jim's question was as a pre-screening to it. Could you have yes or no? And then go to the more detailed question for those who said yes. Have the appropriate answer all the way down.
Well, you made the comment that this was, you know, too cumbersome to have, and as a pre-screening to go through all this. But I mean, if you just had yes and no answers, I mean, you could do it.
Well, wouldn't everybody just answer yes to all of them?
I don't know why you would. Do you have a 990? Yes, and I don't have one. I mean.
Well, maybe not that one, but
do you know what a 990 is? Then everybody will just say no. I mean, then you'll lower the number of applicants.
Do you have local support, yes or no? I mean,
do you have local support, yes or no, and who is it?
You could screen this in a lot.
Your urgency, capacity to achieve multiple benefits, and everybody can say yes to all of that.
And then you still have, you know, so if you get 100 to pre-screen, then you're down to 90. So how much did that pre-screening really help if you just got yes and no without a whole lot of detail?
Well, we don't have to use that criteria for your... As we mentioned before, I mean, either you or me and you can come up with a different set of pre-screening criteria, okay? And in an effort to try to do a better job of 99 or 100 reduced to 99, you know, 100 gets reduced. But if we're only going to get... Well, I don't have any idea how many applications are going to come in, but...
But if you make it easier...
I agree. You know, what happens is if we can get this abbreviated application, okay, and then you might get 300 of those, okay, down to 75 fund, however many you fund, you know. But I believe that there are absolutely people walking away, and these are not necessarily the least astute sportsman organizations. And they're just flat walking away. They're just saying this is just not worth it. This has been referred to me as the equivalent or worse than a NACA grant, you know.
No, I'm sorry, I've done NACA. I disagree on that one.
You know, and so the next question here. In the appropriation language, it says you will judge these on this. Okay. Was that what we put in the appropriations language? Okay. So if we wanted to change that, in our next appropriation language in order to dramatically simplify, okay, that administrative process. We have the ability to do that.
Well, you'd recommend it to the legislature, yes.
Correct.
You could recommend whatever language you wanted. I mean, there were a couple of additions that were added by the legislature, but they weren't criteria. They were really more, I don't remember that.
What kind of ranking? Like, in all else, if all else is the just, same, but this one instead
right,
of that
but it,
one?
Right, but it does say, because it's, yeah, exactly. So basically, a list of, and I you know, was it 15 or whatever items here? I didn't count them.
Yeah, there's 18 on the 19, sorry.
I mean, what I would, you probably don't want to eliminate any of these criteria from the ultimate decision of the agency, but you could, I mean, you could write in here that they should be pre-screened on these four, five criteria, and then the final decision should be based on all the criteria.
And would that dramatically help? If
it would help a lot of make people think through in some cases.
If they were pre-screening,
they thought they had a chance then, yeah. Because then once they get through the pre-screening, they figure they're in a smaller pool and they'll be a little more serious about it.
There's also, I just
you know, one of the things that you said before that appears to me to be mostly, I don't know if it's procedure protocol, doesn't seem like it's an overwhelming obstacle, is if you've got the Round Lake Sportsman's Club teamed up with a watershed district, why can't that application, I understand you want one person who's obligated for the paperwork, that's fine, the only person that would be signing that then would be the watershed district, okay? Why can't the application say Raleigh Sportsman's Club / Nobles SWCD? Now, they don't become, I mean, and then, because you say only one person can be responsible.
Yeah, okay? We have to give sign the grant agreement with one specific.
Okay, and it has to be that way? You couldn't sign a grant agreement with the Raleigh Sportsman's Club and the Nobles County Stormwater Conservation District. You can get the president and the officer of that to sign so that you have actually have two organizations responsible for those?
You know, I have to check with our OMBS staff. That's what I'm told the preferred way of doing it is.
Okay, can we try to think outside the box a little bit on that? Because when I saw the list of applications last year, and there was just like 40 watershed districts in there, and I said these are government entities competing against our you know, people with well-established grant writers, et cetera, competing against non sophisticated sportsman's clubs. Well, in essence, that might not be the case. Okay? And that would be much more clear, okay, as to who's actually receiving the grant, you know, is that going to, you know, the target audience that we're after, you know?
Is the SWCD acting as a fiscal agent?
I think it varies by grant. And off the top of my head, I can't tell
you. But in the cases that Scott's talking about, where you put together a small club and an SWCD, is that the role of the SWCD?
I think pretty much. And I haven't looked at these for a while, the fiscal 10 grants. Then in that case, too, I believe they're handling a large part of the reporting and some of the paperwork tracking.
So things like using terms like fiscal agent and grant manager or field manager or something like that might get you around the challenges you face in OMBS and DNR and still provide for everybody the knowledge of who's actually doing the work. So you might think about that. I don't know how much trouble.
Leslie, what financial documents do they have to have that you refer to?
Can you help me out with that? Again, it depends on the level of that they're requesting. One is a 990, which is a nonprofit report to IRS.
Don't you have to have raised a certain amount of money before you have to do a 990? I think it's over $50,000.
I think it's $25,000.
A lot of these groups aren't even up. $25,000.
And there is if they're getting a grant agreement, that's included in that raise part. So that means that they're handling the $25,000, is my understanding.
Well, that'd be the next year, though.
Next year, correct. But I think there is some wiggle room in there where if they don't have that, they have to give us something like your yearly financial statement? There's some other financial documents that a typical organization have that you can do in lieu of that. but I would expect that should they apply again or for the next time, they would have to.
Okay, well, the initial time.
Right, and that's what, and again, we're following the grant management policies. We're also looking for things like their list of board of directors, if they have a conflict of interest policy, and the key people on that. And that's just kind of, that's pretty easy stuff to provide. They know who the board is. They know who's working on the grants.
What value does that have to you? Who the five people whose names are on some board of directors list somewhere. They could make up five names of people you that don't have anything to do with the organization and you would never know the difference. What value does that have in the grant application? Why is that valuable?
It just gives people an idea of who else is working on that, and it's something that we've got trailed down from the larger grants that we put into ours to make just kind of follow as a due diligence and fiscal documentation. Let you know who you're working with and what their capacity is as a club.
It's standard in all kinds of, for example, well, any kind of grant program, whether it be a government grant program or a nonprofit grant program, because what you're looking to assess is the capacity of the organization to fulfill its fiduciary responsibilities as well as its programmatic responsibilities. So if an organization is incorporated, for example, if it has a board of directors, if it has an audited financial statement or a 990, it demonstrates that this is an organization that can pull off and be successful in a project.
Is it? Go ahead.
So are you looking, like, say, if you had a Business Forever chapter, are you looking for the chapters, or are you looking for the states, or are you looking for the national one?
You're looking, in the small grants program, you'd be looking at the local level. But, you know, who's going to be responsible for making this project successful.
But I mean, that just doesn't happen. That just doesn't happen in the real world. I mean, those local chapters just don't have that type of structure. Mm-hmm. Doesn't it?
I mean, I can tell you right now, Heather, if you wanted to be on the Nobles County Presidents Forever Committee, you're on. I mean, you're it. We'll put your name down from now on. I mean, it comes and goes so fluidly that, you know, to me, it just seems like some more redundant paperwork that doesn't add. You know, the other thing is every project has to have the approval of the local regional wildlife manager. To me, that's the person who does the due diligence. She's worked with that sportsman's club before. Ballatin Sportsman's Club came in. They got a little funding last year. But I can tell you that whatever wildlife manager signed off on that, she knew who they were and whether or not they could fix that. I mean, isn't it your on-the-ground person that has the very best capabilities of determining? I mean, they did this before. I worked with them on that. I saw that. You know, to me, that is more value than who's the board of directors, who's the this, and who's the that.
I think, Scott, though, and I think that's great. I mean, I don't disagree that the local manager probably has a really good understanding of how, you know, what the capacity is for this organization to pull off a project. But when we're talking about standards, that there has to be certain standards that across all organizations, it's a level playing field. And so this is a way in which you look to see, well, what is the minimum criteria, if you will, or what are the minimum standards that you can put forth as an organization to show that you have the capacity for the programmatic and fiduciary responsibilities. So it's really hard for a grant manager in St. Paul to have that level of knowledge. So we ask for this kind of baseline information that helps us to assess the capacity of our organization. Because you're putting a lot of burden then on a third party if you're only going by word of mouth or by somebody's word. And not to say that their word is not good, but there's a burden there that is, I think, could be construed as being unfair.
The other issue is you can't hold them responsible.
Right.
It could be for the finance. If something goes wrong, that person, you've got to have somebody responsible.
What would be the impact to you in the programs you're managing if we recommended and the legislature agreed to divide the appropriation into smaller grants, smaller groups of less than 25, let's say, 50, and no more than $25,000?
You mean the group has to be have less than 25 members?
Or, say, have raised less than $25,000 in the last 12 months, or the last calendar year?
My first thought is, how do you document that? What do I need to see them to prove that they are they do have less than 25 members. And if there are 26, does someone not sign up for this year? Are you talking like a PF chapter, or are you talking PF, you know, statewide? Where do you break it down?
Let's talk about income.
So if they received a CPL grant last year for $20,000 and they had $5,000 they had in fundraisers, they couldn't apply. So you automatically have to kick up into the larger grant for the following year?
Does the grant always have to, I mean, obviously, they got received the grant and they did a project. Mm-hmm. But I mean, it didn't in any way raise their individual fundraising capability, which might only be $5,000 a year. Why would the fact that they got a grant, even though they made the same $5,000 the next year, why would that $25 grant from the year before all of a sudden mean they made $30,000? Because they didn't. They made five.
Yeah, but if you look at it from an IRS point of view, that money's coming into their coffers and going out the other door.
So it's still income.
Yeah, it's still income to them. I agree with you, Scott. But
that's my next point. For the IRS, but we're not dealing with the IRS. We're dealing with the small grants program, you know. I mean, could we exempt the any grant income that they received in the prior year from that income then?
I think the English language would accommodate them.
Okay, we can write the words. Can we do it? Can we write those words?
Well, so you know, I mean, everybody's got to agree on down the line, from the subcommittee to the council to the legislature to the governor, and I can't guarantee that.
Well,
but
again,
I think the bottom line is. As you expressed in your communication, your draft communication, mm-hmm. that the playing field's not level for these small groups. They don't have the sophistication, the time to apply in this relatively complex system, relatively complex to them. So then what's the direct and simplest way to make this money more available to small conservation groups so we build conservation in the center. It doesn't have to be a sportsman's group. It could be any kind of group doing conservation.
Like association or any other outfit, yep.
Sure.
And, you know, it's not like the CPL staff came up with a lot of these rules and regulations. We're just forced to implement them. So there's a lot of things that we can't do. And I agree, I'd like to get away from them, too. It'd make our life easier, too.
So if you weren't running, let's say, the Fish and Wildlife Service, would they still have to put up with that same criteria?
I don't know what the Fish and Wildlife Service's regulations are.
Well, I mean, the group that we...
We have written the appropriation so that they would comply with Minnesota grants, regulations, and laws. So the answer to your question is yes. They may interpret them differently, I suppose. But the answer is they would have to follow the same.
Well, that's actually in the statute, too. It says that all of this money has to follow the grant rules.
That's right.
To the grant.
Is there any way then, I mean, can somebody that can speak in a language that everyone can understand go and say, this is what we're trying to accomplish. These regulations are too cumbersome. Can we get a simplified set of grant regulations for our small grants programs for grants under $25,000 and then get a separate operating set of criteria for that?
Especially under $25,000, as Leslie said, under $25,000, that's the cutoff for when they need the $990.
Yeah.
So for under $25,000, you could have different criteria.
And there's a provision, as I understand, we're getting exemptions from coverage.
Oh, from the grant policy. Yeah, right.
You have to get a letter back, too.
Not letter says people. Yeah.
But I think the other thing you can do, too, which I know that the Arts and Cultural Legacy Fund does, is they're not only trying to spread art and culture around the state, but they're also trying to build capacity in organizations. And that's something that's not explicit in this appropriation. So one thing that could be done is that there could be a capacity building element attached. I don't know if it could be paid for at the OHF, but where you would have somebody who's dedicated to working with sports groups and helping them to develop projects and grant applications. So you're not only helping them to apply for these funds, but you're also helping them to build capacity to apply for other funds.
That was a staff person I asked for last year to be in the field.
And that's in your appropriation for this year, that staff person, right?
Last year, the staff person was specifically supposed to go out and do that. Right now, we just need the person to help us get through today and to help us meet all the current policies. That's something we want them to do. Right now, my concern is meeting all of our legal requirements for running a grant program, and then that will come out.
But, Scott, if you go down that line, if you wanted to do 125,000, you could just take a few of these criteria and say these are the only criteria that are going to be that you need to deal with those 125,000. Because, I mean, we can think about 125,000 consistency with current conservation science map. These people aren't going to know.
So my question to you is, right now, on a $20,000 grant, okay, are you sifting that one with the same degree of intensity as you are $150,000 grant?
Yes.
Okay, but we could simplify that so that you wouldn't have to.
Right. You'd have to write out the appropriation. You'd have two programs. You've got $25,000 to $400,000, and then you could have an $125,000 program.
And any grants in the small
grants? So how many grants do you have? Could you take all the applications that you have now, strip out the name, address, any identifiable information that would identify who applied, and share that with us. So we would have blind everything, but we would be able to look at every kind of project that you're seeing, but wouldn't know who it is and where it's from.
I can definitely give you that to the funded grants. There's a limited amount of information I can release until after we've awarded the second round.
Even if nobody knows who it is?
I could check, but under our current grant, data privacy things, I cannot. I can give you name, address, amount, and then last year we were allowed to add summary data, like, you know, we had 500,000 for prairie work and 2 million under habitat for acquisition. So you're looking like I got, you know, a 5,000 grant, a 10,000 grant, a 150,000, that kind of, or how many of those did I get?
And it would be interesting to me to see what kind of projects are coming in.
Yeah.
You know, and if I couldn't identify who it was, or who the person was, or the group was, or where they're from, is that any breach of?
Well, it could be that. The data privacy law is pretty strict on that.
You can have it sometime in November.
After the appropriations are made. There you go.
Sorry.
Yeah. So, well, we are all truly trying to work towards the same end, you know. I think we can fix some of the issues we have in our appropriations bill as far as funding $400,000 into a big project. We could actually write that appropriations bill that would not allow that. We could do that. You and me can work together to try to come up with for the next round of RFPs with a simplified 3-page application to use as a screening tool. And maybe we can try to get that like ready in time so that if we deem it that it can work, then we could use that, you know, at a later time.
And you actually also could use that if it's under $25,000, they wouldn't need to put anything more in.
Could we put in our appropriations language? And I think I'm very aware of what this would do, but could you put in our appropriations language that if you received a grant from us, from the council on the top, that you cannot apply for a small grant, period. End of story, zero.
Ever?
Just that year.
Just that year.
But so Friends Forever got $8 million. No Friends Forever chapter could apply for a small grant, period.
So okay. You feel like if the chapter from Marshall applied, the chapter from Rochester could?
Correct. Well, if Pheasants Forever, as an entity, got funded, then it would eliminate them from individually applying for a grant on the downside.
Why would you want to do that?
Yeah.
Well, it was this small grants program was designed to not have to allow those people to compete against all the people that are getting the money on the top side. It was, you know, it's a kind of a different target market. You know, now I can tell you that Pheasants Forever, if they think they've got $1 million worth of restoration and enhancement work, they can put that in their proposal on the top side. Say, we have $1 million for the restoration enhancement work on state ground, okay, and be funded there. Okay.
Well, wouldn't you get to that? What if you've got this Rogue Pheasants Forever chapter that doesn't necessarily play well with the statewide group?
I think there are one or two of them.
I bet there are.
Yeah.
And they want to apply for a small grant because if they didn't get included in the statewide thing, is there something wrong with it?
So here's my question then. How do we work it out so that the organizations that are getting large appropriations are also not consuming two-thirds of our small grant program and not leaving any money for those other independent concert sportsman's group? How do we achieve that? Well, I'm thinking mostly about, I look at when organizations like Bowser, and Bowser runs all the easements for RIM-WRP, and some of our conservation district people do all that work. Okay, so they're obviously receiving a ton of grant money, and then they come down and apply down here, okay, or you could take the Metropolitan Parks Commission, they get a big pile of parks and trails money, and then they come in and they apply down here, and a lot of the same entities, it's like we're just going to shotgun a whole box of shells into every conceivable pot of money we can find, and when we're trying to target these dollars. It's hard if those organizations are competing against all the other organizations, the same organizations that, I'm not saying we want to do that, but is there any way in our selection criteria that could have some kind of relevance?
Well, I think that was the concept of, say, affirmatively giving priority to groups of, and understand the difficulty of under 25 members. Under $25,000 raised in the last fiscal year, if they have one. That's the concept. You can give priority either in the ranking system, or you could carve out a chunk of money for them, or something like that.
I'm not necessarily direct. My intent here is not to say, well, Feathers Forever got a bunch of money, so they shouldn't get any small grants money. But when I take a look at the amount of local units of government, and when we wrote the Conservation Partners Program, it's my understanding that the legislature added local units of government could apply. I'm not sure that when we envisioned that was ever in our... I perceive that was a change in the...
I think that was in the statute all along.
Oh, I think I'm on that.
No, I do.
I think in 2008, I think that's what passed.
Right. It wasn't the Small Grants Committee that did that.
No, but it was already done for you.
That's what I'm saying. So
it's done in 2008.
So that was before the grant.
So if we wanted to, is there any conceivable way that we could take local units of government out as an applicant in the small grants program?
We could amend the statutes. Try.
We can write it. Can it pass? I don't know.
No, we can't.
Could we try?
We can try.
You could. I mean, one of the things you could put in your criteria is you could add another thing to the criteria that just said, availability of other resources for the project or something like that. So if there's other available resources for it,
Yeah, but if you ask that question on the grant application and they know it's going to drop this floor, what do you think they're going to say?
Yeah, I know. That's a problem. Is there?
Or maybe they haven't gone and looked, so therefore their answer is that we don't know, but they haven't put the time to look.
The real essence is size of budget. And if your budget is so small, you don't have one.
This is true.
It's zero.
Well, we have a desire to iron out what we perceive to be some wrinkles. The difficulty of application is a big wrinkle. Okay, and maybe me and you can work together on a simplified preliminary application, and that might go really long ways. To making groups not go through a 12 or 15 hour process, and then go through a 1 or 2 hour process, and if that works for them, then they can put forth the other effort once they've been screened, and that can go away.
You may want to consider, too, if it's less than $25,000, to not make them go through that other process, and to have a simplified, to stay with the simplified process if you're under $25,000, because I would think that since you don't have to have the 990 or whatever, you don't have to. You know, you might not want to make them worry about the conservation science and all that stuff. You know, you could just have basics.
I think,
and then, so then they wouldn't need to go back if it's under 25,000.
That would be awesome. Can we do that? I mean, is that something you think we could see really work with? We're going to have grants under 25,000 that have this criteria, you know? And we could still use a pre-screening process on the grants over that.
Right, use the same process.
Yep.
Basically, everybody applies the yep. first process, the pre-screening. They all apply the same. And anything over 25,000, if you're going to select them kind of for the next round or whatever, then they fill out the more right. complicated stuff.
I think the question is, does the department need instruction from the legislature to do that?
I think it would be best if we did.
Okay, so that's
the answer.
So now that's so the next question is, I'm sure the English language would allow us to write that, okay? Do you think it would ever happen? Do you think that's something that we could conceivably accomplish in our appropriation language, saying we're gonna for grants under 25,000, it's gonna be this process, and for grants over, it's gonna be that. Do you think we could conceivably get that passed?
Depending on what you put in for the criteria, I think you just need some assurance that it's gonna be well spent.
You
know,
we need to make sure it makes the
upper heritage fund requirements. Constitutional requirements is something
you've met, yep. Yeah, and anything else you guys have come up with since, and just make sure it's a quality project. And sometimes that does take more questions, but hopefully we can reduce those or figure out. And we still like to have things like the land manager's approval to make sure they agree with that.
Do you have any other questions, Jim?
No, I guess I don't. I think it's the problem is in front of us, and I don't think anybody, it's not too difficult. And if we want to do it, it can be done. I mean, we just don't worry about it. I just think there seems to be some resistance to making this work. I mean, that's what I feel. Plus, it's just, it isn't that complicated. I don't see why it's centered up that way. So.
There's a lot on it before the older plans came
out. I think it would be your advantage to impanel a group of focus group or advisors from a wide variety of potential applicants to run things by, try and make sure you're not inadvertently and unnecessarily making things overly complex.
Sounds like a good discussion.
I would like to be there.
We'll get one of those focus group operations that has a one-way mirror.
Like a madman.
Yeah.
You
know, Law and Order, you know, their eyes behind the mirror. So, well, we're we can work on some of the things that, you know, me and you have not communicated, you know, boy, I bet it's been, well, I probably haven't been on the phone with you in 6-8 months probably. Mm-hmm. You know, I would, if we can have a little more dialogue, you know, here's what's happening, here's the frustration, here's what we're working on, here's why, you know, you asked, this was your question. I think that would be good, and I think that I believe that if we can iron out a few of the wrinkles, you know, that this program will continue to improve and most possibly get bigger. But there is a fair amount of head scratching going on out there. So, you know, why is, you know, we'll try to communicate more formally what our wishes are, and then maybe we can work back and forth to see if we can get those to a consensus that works for you and satisfies the desires of the council. That would ultimately be the goal.
Well, this is helpful because when you hear things as too bureaucratic or too many X, Y, and Z, it's tough to actually nail down what we can work on and what we can't and explain it. So this is helpful.
So, does anybody else have anything else? Do you have any?
I think just in summary, one of the things that we all want to do, the department, the legislature, and the legislature's council, is we want to grow conservation and grow participation in this program. So what would be ideal is to see numbers of applications going up, demand for the dollars going up, things like that.
Well, agree. And I think what you're going to see this year is you're going to see applications that are, I mean, if we only have 55 now, we're not going to get 80 of them tomorrow, are we?
I'd be surprised.
You know, that's what
but I think we have better applications this year in better projects. Yeah. We had some applications last year that were maybe 1 cent. So
they would. They spent a lot of time on that baby.
Yeah. what we're seeing is that the budgets are better thought out. The questions are answered more thoroughly. The projects are better thought out.
Are they from primarily all the same people? Are you getting any newbie on the block? Anybody that just, you know, because obviously if we want to grow it, we need to grow that by bringing in not the same organizations over and over can't do great work.
Couple.
They can.
And again, I've just kind of been skimming and going through when people have questions and trying to walk them through.
How did your meetings go around the state?
They're okay. We had decent turnout. Probably some less. I know there's a couple that had nobody show up in the evening. I don't have a problem. No one showed up. But I had quite a good amount of staff in the afternoon. And the staff have to be informed as well to help people when they do their approval forms and anything else if they're working on those lines.
Are you going to continue to do those? What else are you doing? This is a question that we talked about, and the response that we got the last time I asked the question was nothing. So I'll ask that question again. What are you doing to market and promote this grant project, other than the website?
Right now we're doing pretty much the same thing we did as last year because, you know, we do not have the staff and the time to do anything else. So if you want, like, a Cadillac program, you've got to fund it at a Cadillac level. It seems like that's what you want, but we've only got funding for maybe a Ford Focus level program.
So if you were going to market this program and you had the money to do it, what would you do to market this program?
You know, we tried sending things to Game Fair last year and State Fair. For the first year, at least it wasn't the right target audience that year. And right now, I couldn't tell you. We'd probably go back and rework our public, you know, our PR plan, our contact plan, and see what people would like. Honestly, I haven't had time to think about that recently. I don't know.
I went to Game Fair last year, and the little postcards about the small grants program were absolutely buried. You couldn't find them if you tried. I looked, and finally went and says, where is the small grant stuff? They went over, they moved, they shoveled a whole bunch of stuff off, and they were running about this much stuff. So the fact that we were at Game Fair didn't really mean that we were promoting our small grants program at Game Fair.
Come on, I had that program for like 6 weeks by then. I was lucky to get a postcard out.
Well, I understand. You weren't there. There were some other guys there. But
yeah.
I mean, do we... So if there was more money... Okay, you were at Game Fair once. You said you were at State Fair. Okay, if you had more money, what would you do with it? How would you promote the plan?
Right now, I don't know. We go back and revisit some of the things we've done, see if there are better ways to do it. We did do some brainstorming last year, and I haven't looked at that from last year because we simply didn't have time. And we would like to do what we've talked about is work more with our grantees and our applicants to help them understand more. We squeezed a little bit of that in this year with some grant writing discussions, for example, our PowerPoints on the website.
What about putting something in the fishing synopsis and the hunting synopsis? And people put ads in there.
You want us to buy an ad in the fishing?
Well, I'm just saying that would get it at some of those target groups, I would think.
Would we have to buy it? Isn't it the department's magazine?
No, that's how they
couldn't
pay
they
for
put it.
It
in there? Well, I understand that, but and could they put it in there if they wanted to? Could they have to pay for it to put it in there?
Okay. We could do it. Pete's saying this.
Well, I think that would be a great place to put it.
Well, that's where you're going to get the...
Oh, man, that would have an audience that... We never did come up with my bumper sticker that said 1-800 apply for a grant. I really thought that would be a really good marketing scheme. And it probably would work, but it didn't make the cut.
If the council and the legislature wanted a more program with more outreach, and they wanted it to take effect for the appropriation that they're making in the upcoming session, would you need an amendment to your fiscal year 11 appropriation to take some money from grants and put it in administration?
Very possibly. I would think so. I have a question, too, where you all talk a lot about, you know, you're careful about funding things like engineering and research and monitoring. If you're going out and working with applicants to train them how to do grants or to write better grants, does that fall under the same guidelines, or is that an allowable cost with the Outdoor Heritage Funds? Where's the line there as to how much we can do that isn't strictly related to giving grants and getting grants out the door?
Those are important. You have answered that question.
I thought you were going to.
Okay. I pointed at you both. Yeah.
It's in the appropriation law. It's under the terms of reimbursement. It's directly related to necessary for. Directly related to necessary for. The simplest way to think about that is that if you push the first domino, it'll all go down. And so you can pay for the pushing of that first domino, provided that the project is done.
But how about the applicants who, you know, you work with, and for whatever reason, maybe the landowner says no, the application falls through?
But that's just part of the cost of getting to the project.
At some point, we can maybe discuss just what is allowed and how.
Could we use, which I would gladly increase, by the way, can we use our administrative budget, which is running way under the, I mean, we're dramatically under the 1% we're allowed, correct? Okay. Could we put, you know, we talked about before about how are we going to, me and Jim talked about this, we need to do a great job of letting everybody in Minnesota know how good we're doing. Okay. What did they get for their money? And I can tell you right now, nobody knows. Okay. I'm actually going to call the editor of Outdoor News to see if he'll start one of those you know, those clocks that they have, you know, about the federal deficit going ratcheting up, and putting a clock like that on there that changes every week as to how many acres have been restored, how many acres have been protected, and just every week put one little click in there so everybody can see as those projects come in and are funded and the grant is finalized, you know, that report is, you know, whether that's every month or every 6 months, I don't know how often it is, but to keep a tally of how we're doing. Could we use our administrative budget, if we had to pay for that, or pay for promotion of our small grants program, okay, could we increase our administrative budget to 1% and use those dollars to promote our small grants program and the accomplishments of the Outdoor Heritage Fund?
I just said, here we go along with it. I mean, the LCCMR has a staff person that was hired to do promotion. And that was when they had a task force back in the early 2000s. That was one of the recommendations of the task force, was to do more promotion of their stuff. But so they actually hired a person that that's his job.
Is that something we could do?
We could try.
I mean, is that the way to achieve the book? A good way to achieve that goal? You know, that person that runs around and does nothing but promote our accomplishments in our small grants program. I mean, is that?
I think you could probably get somebody who would provide public information about opportunities and things of that sort.
Not handing out my 1-800 get a grant bumper sticker.
But you've got to do it in the right legislative climate.
Are we in that climate? Weatherman?
Well, you'll hear.
I mean, Leslie's saying she can't do it. She doesn't have the money to do it. Okay. If we want more people to apply for our grants program, which I can tell you that 55... I don't know if you think that's great. I think that's... I would like to see that to be 255. Now, if 200 of them were junk, you'd still end up with the same 55, but at least those people would be learning what it takes and getting more in tune as to what it takes to continue to participate. I don't want participation to go down. I want participation to go up. I want the number of organizations to go up, you know, and we need to figure out how to go about doing that.
Gone a long way today to get there.
I'm going to quit my job as a financial advisor and go hand out 1-800 get a grant bumper sticker.
Yeah, we'd like to run a good grant program, do it well, and whether that, you know, if it means small right now, if we work through the first initial couple of years, then that's fine. Then we can have a good basis to grow from. I think jumping into a large grant program that isn't growing well is a mistake. So that was one reason why I only requested pretty much the same level of funding for this current round of funding. Again, we'll still be working on our second round of grants.
Yeah, that's always a big fear, is that if you have one bad grant in the bunch, it's just a crap. You don't want that kind of publicity.
Mm-hmm. But the clock is ticking.
It is ticking.
you started out with 25 chances and you're down to 23.
Any other questions, Captain? Thank you for coming.
Absolutely. Thank you for
coming. You need a motion to adjourn?
What does it have to do with your draft?
If I can send it, then just, I would sign that as Scott Rawl, not the subcommittee chair or anything like that. I would just.
Can you put it on his chair?
You can put it in your chair. You can put your title over there. Really. But it's not going to be coming from the smaller end. It's going to be coming from the smaller end.
Chair.
That's
what it says.
Good. Send it.
You need me to sign once you send it?
I will get you a...
Oh, you want? Okay. That's
good.
They're all big on that protocol stuff. We just... what's on you?
I don't know why it couldn't be better.
In 2 months. I think you've got a draft to simplify the application. That's
pretty much the Two months ago, because we're still doing our discussion.
You're going to post it on.
So it can be...
How's it?